The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
It seems like it should be easy, but I think one of the hardest things in life is to separate what's real from what's fake, from what's a put on to what's sincere. Is it confidence or is it insecurity? Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference. Which one is Joe Burrow? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can answer that question, 888-729-3776. Coming up on today's show, let's play a game of over-under. Caesars has put out its odds on NFL wins this coming season. We'll play a game. Nuna will put them to me, and I'll tell you whether or not those teams are going to go over or under their projected win totals. And I think we're avoiding the ultimate question. Not just the right question, but the inevitable question that each and every one of us are going to get to when it comes to the coronavirus and this quarantine. We keep asking ourselves when sports will come back, and we keep trying to answer it with conversations about fans in the stands, tests, or quarantines. But we're really avoiding the question we will ultimately all get to. We're really avoiding the question that lies at the heart of this issue. We'll get to that today here on the Will Cain Show, but it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Joe Burrow, not just projected, but almost inevitable, number one overall pick in the NFL draft next Thursday night, presumed to go to the Cincinnati Bengals, went on ESPN Baton Rouge this week. He talked about the idea of being a Bengal. He talked about the challenges of playing for bad teams, and he talked about the entire concept of the NFL draft. Listen to this.
The draft is funny because you don't have, you know, not a lot of professions get that pick you to, you know, engineers don't get drafted to certain companies. So that's kind of peculiar in, you know, the capitalistic ways of the United States. But that's how it is, and the teams that have the worst year pick at the top, and that's why they're there. So, you know, whatever team I go to, it's going to be a challenge at the beginning. I'm going to have to, you know, persevere through it, and just like I've done in the past. And, you know, you might have a really good first year. You might have a really bad first year. You don't really know, especially without OTAs this year, and you're going to have less time with your team. So there's going to be ups and downs for sure. You're just going to have to battle through it.
Joe Burrow is absolutely right. The draft is not an act in capitalism. It's an act in socialism. It's an act in helping the worst out by giving them the best pick. It isn't how we work in society and other professions. As he points out, engineers aren't required to go to the weakest companies to ensure that they're better next year. We don't go onto college campuses and go, who's the valedictorian? Who did the best? Great. You get to go work at the worst company. Joe Burrow is right. He's also right. It's going to be a massive challenge to be in Cincinnati. But this comes on the heels of several other statements Joe Burrow has made, I think giving rise to legitimate questions about how committed or excited he is to be a Cincinnati Bengal. I think in your heart of hearts, if you're a Cincinnati Bengal fan, or if you're a Cincinnati Bengal talent scout, or if you're in the Bengals front office, you have to have some concerns about whether or not this marriage is made in heaven. Joe Burrow has what seems like an unwavering confidence. I've seen it on the football field, and I've seen it off the field as well. When LSU beat Texas this past year, and Joe Burrow was the picture of calm and determined confidence, you could tell this guy is a winner. No matter the situation, no matter the time in the game, no matter the down and distance, he seemed to have a presence about him that suggested, no problem, I got it. Joe Burrow has that exact kind of confidence you would hope for. But I always end up asking myself when someone's confidence is off the charts, is it real or is it fake? Is it a put on or is it sincere? Is it confidence or is it cockiness? Cockiness, I think, is a different thing than confidence. I think it is a charade. I think it's a masquerade ball of cloaking insecurity in fake confidence. It's dangerous, too, because it's, in essence, the opposite of what you want from a leader. I've always liked Baker Mayfield. I think I've been one of his media champions. I've liked the edge, the chip on his shoulder. I've liked the two-time walk-on. I've liked the Heisman Trophy winner and the man who was doubted by everyone because of his height. I like the character that overcomes all of that. But it is a nagging concern of mine, and I think it's one that has bled over to others as well. Is Baker cocky, or is he confident? Is he 100% believe in himself, or is he pretending to overcome an insecurity? And I, through this media tour with Joe Burrow, have started to wonder some of the same things. Is Joe Burrow's confidence real and unshakable, or is it something covering up an insecurity that will rear its ugly head the minute the bright lights turn on, the cameras gather around, the talkers like myself begin to criticize, and the questions about the losses mount in Cincinnati? I have asked many people that I respect about Joe Burrow's confidence. I've asked Jim Nagy, ESPN's NFL draft analyst. I've asked Lou Riddick, ESPN's NFL insider. And the other night on a deep dive into the NFL draft podcast with the Bleacher Report's Matt Miller and NFL.com's Lance Zierlein, Joe Burrow's confidence, in contrast to perhaps Baker's, came up. Listen to this.
There's the Baker Mayfield cockiness, which can cross the line. And then there's the Joe Burrow cockiness where you almost sense a little bit of a hint of a smile is coming, where he's got a smirk if you doubt him. And, you know, I have certain doubts about him physically, but I've just seen this too much. Guys who have intangibles, guys who throw with timing and accuracy, like, these are the kind of things that all-time greats are made of. And I'm not saying Joe Burrow's an all-time great, but I can't be so blind to the fact that he has certain elements in his game. I mean, there's a reason why Tom Brady became Tom Brady, that Joe Montana became Joe Montana. They weren't physically gifted, but they had the it factor, which is really is just intangibles. And that is what, there's no way to deny it. I mean, Burrow has that stuff.
No, I like you bringing up Baker Mayfield, because I'm a big believer that cockiness is often a disguise for insecurity. And I really like Baker, but I wonder sometimes now, is all of that a big cloak for actually insecurity? And I wondered the same thing about Burrow, but I agree with you. There's that hint of that smile, and I think it's just almost like a serene confidence with Burrow that is what the greats have. But it's a fine line. It's a fine line to distinguish. Are we looking at somebody who's faking it or is real on this confidence?
I think he's real. Fair. I think he is. Everyone you talk to loves the guy. Like with Baker, we used to joke and call him the Pied Piper because, like, players loved him. You could, like, talk to coaches who were kind of tired of his act. With Burrow, it's the complete, the players love him. Coaches do, too.
And I think, ultimately, the Bengals will love him as well. I do have questions. I do have some little nagging concerns, but I've never met Joe Burrow in person. I'm sure that kind of interview would put much of that to rest, because all of the people that I respect who have met Joe Burrow say this is not cockiness. This is not masquerading insecurity. It's rather the kind of confidence that the greats have, and I think Joe Burrow might have it as well. And that's Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. NFL over-unders. We've got Vegas's odds on how many games each team will win. Throughout the show today, we're going to address three teams at a time. Let's start today with our supreme leader, Nuno, giving me three teams and whether or not I think they will go over or under Vegas's projected win total. Take it away, supreme leader.
All right, since we talked about Joe Burrow, let's talk about the Cincinnati Bengals. Over-under is set at 5 per Caesars.
Over under 5 for the Cincinnati Bengals, presumably led by Joe Burrow. I will go under 5 wins for the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't think, no matter how great he ultimately will be, Joe Burrow steps in Zach Taylor's second year, and all of a sudden makes that team work more than 5 wins. Give me the under, Nemo.
All right. Another team that probably needs a quarterback, the Los Angeles Chargers. Their number is 8.5. So over under 8.5 with the Chargers.
I will take the under for 8.5 for the Los Angeles Chargers. There's some nice things about the Chargers. I think their defense will be better than they were a season ago. The offensive line isn't as bad as it looked, and some of those weapons are there. But with Tyrod Taylor as the projected quarterback right now, or perhaps Justin Herbert as the quarterback heir apparent. I'm not going to be able to project the Chargers to be the team we thought they would have been had they gotten Tom Brady. 8.5, give me the under, commercial break, Nuno.
Okay, even though he's not here today, but the New York Jets, we'll do this one for our boy Mike A. 6.5, where are you going with that one?
6.5 for the New York Jets. That's a tough one. 6.5. I have to put them at 7 wins this coming season, a season when the New England Patriots will be down. The Buffalo Bills will return and be stronger. The Miami Dolphins played hard last year, and they'll presumably have more talent this coming season. 6.5 for the Jets. Give me the under. I don't think it will be much under, but I don't think I can give the Jets 7 wins. Hopefully they'll upgrade their offensive line. They'll start building that team from the inside out and protecting Sam Darnold. But as it stands today, I will take the under, Nuno, from Portugal. That's your over-unders. That's 3 teams. We'll be doing it throughout the show today. Our Supreme Leader will give us 3 teams at a time on projected over-under win totals. Coming up, I waver every single day, optimistic or pessimistic, about where sports will be for the remainder of 2020. But I think we're avoiding one simple, real, and inevitable question about when sports will return. And I will answer it next on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
1 week to the NFL draft. What are the team needs for some of the most fascinating and important teams in the NFL? We'll ask that of an expert coming up on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. I think there is a question that we're all going to get to, and it will be the question that determines when we get sports back. Will we have sports with fans in the stands in the year 2020? Will we have a fall and winter college football schedule in this calendar year? Will the NFL have a shortened season? Answer this question and you will find your answer. The question is, what is an acceptable infection rate and mortality rate to return to some semblance of normalcy? It's not a question that anyone wants to hear, much less answer, but it is one that we will all inevitably get to and have to answer at some point. Yesterday, college commissioners from across the land, the Group of Five, Power Five, and other conferences in college sports met with Vice President Mike Pence. They talked about when they can return to normalcy. Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby, I think, had the strongest response to the Vice President. He said the following: our players are students. If we're not in college, we're not having contests. Our message was we need to get universities and colleges back open, that we were education-based programs, and we weren't going to have sports until we have something closer to normal college going on. Bob Bowlesby suggesting if students are not gathering on campuses in Ann Arbor, Westwood, Austin, Gainesville, they're not going to be playing on Saturdays as well. So when you hear, for example, the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, being very pessimistic about large gatherings in that state for the rest of this year, or you hear the mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, talking about no concerts, no sporting events, no big gatherings for the foreseeable future, you ask yourself, where does college fit into that formula? Where do students walking around, attending classes on campus, fit into the concept of large-scale gatherings? Because if the answer to that is, we're better off with distance learning, we're better off online, then we're not going to have sports regardless of who's in the stands. We're not going to put students, and in this case, student athletes, together on a football field or a basketball court. Mike Golic Jr. was on Golic and Wingo this morning talking about this concept that Bowlesby lays out.
On the decision-making chart here, and so you're right if you can't get back to that, because also what's at the center of that for the schools is most certainly the liability of this, right? Like, you mentioned Liberty, the lawsuit for against Liberty is essentially, you know, accusing them of profiting from the coronavirus pandemic because they've reduced the campus services so much and haven't been refunding fees for students, according to the lawsuit. Like, you imagine if now you've got a situation where college football brings back these air quote student athletes while the rest of the students can't be on campus so that we can fire up the incredibly lucrative machine that is college football. You'd imagine how that would go.
They distinguished their product from the professional ranks. They distinguished college football from the NFL, which has a union, has to be able to negotiate, and has a cost-benefit analysis that each player can go through on whether or not the risk of getting sick or someone that you love sick versus the reward of your paycheck is worth it. None of that applies to student athletes. And Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick said something else that I have been thinking about for a couple of weeks. He lays out what would be a terrible scenario for college sports. Quote, "That's the worst version of this. Getting started and having to stop. This is all about sort of begins and ends with bringing our students back to campus. It's just hard to say how you can say we believe the campus isn't safe for our student body, but oh, we're going to bring one group of students back. In that case, athletes." He talks about the worst version of stops and starts. And I have wondered, even if we get over this pandemic to some extent this summer, and even if we can put on PGA events, or tennis for that matter, or outdoor open-air events as Mark Cuban has talked about getting back to first, the nation might be going through rolling shutdowns from time to time. We're back for 2 months, we're off for 1 month. We're back for a bit, the breakouts rise, we have to shut back down as we try to hit Goldilocks equilibrium on what the healthcare system can handle as people get sick. But sports leagues cannot exist, whether in the amateur ranks or the professional ranks, with a stop-and-start society. They cannot handle waves of roll-downs and shutdowns. They can only handle consistency. And I am ultimately incredibly pessimistic at this point on the idea that we can test and quarantine our way back to sports without fans in the stands. We talked about it yesterday here on the Will Cain Show. The Bundesliga in Germany, the NBA in bubble cities, the Major League Baseball idea of gathering in Phoenix, Arizona. I just can't imagine the logistics. How many tests? How often tested? How solid the quarantine? And all of those ideas are predicated on the concept we can somehow reduce the infection rate to zero. Because if one player gets sick, we have to contact trace whoever he's been around, and then we're shutting down teams, and then we're shutting down leagues again. If our goal, which I really honestly don't think it's anyone's goal, is to reduce our infection rate to zero, the only thing we can truly do is lock ourselves in our homes until a vaccine comes along. And that leads us to the inevitable question. What is an acceptable risk rate? What is an acceptable infection rate? What is an acceptable mortality rate to return to some sense of normalcy? Many will hate that question. Some will get mad at me for asking it, and some won't like the idea that there is actually an answer to that. There are risks we take in everyday life. Driving is a risk and people die. We don't reduce the speed limit to 10 miles an hour to reduce that to as close to zero as we can get. So we accept some elevated level of risk. We accept some level of mortality in exchange for what it takes to get where we're going at an economical speed. At some point, we are going to return to our economy, our jobs, and our sports. We will. We will get to this question. We will get to this answer. We don't want to do it right now because we act like it means you're accepting the death of some people, and that's not the case. Nobody wants that. But realism requires us to understand this will be a balancing act. And it's going to be a balancing act sooner rather than later. And we're going to have to ask and answer that question. I don't know yet what the answer is. What is an acceptable elevated risk of infection and elevated mortality rate to return to some sense of normalcy? I know that's the question we will get to because we will never be able to achieve the other. Quarantine, test, and reduce our society to zero. Even if that were possible, the cost of shutting everything down until a vaccine comes along. And remember, there is still no vaccine to the virus of HIV. Shutting everything down until a vaccine comes along is perhaps the most unrealistic question to be asking of all. You can tell me what you think, 888-729-3776. Let's talk about team needs leading up to the NFL draft. What exactly will the Buccaneers be picking to surround around Tom Brady? Let's bring in Andy Benoit, a football expert, next to address team needs in the NFL. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Who needs what? I love mapping out the draft. Not just for my favorite team, but yours as well. How can you get the right positions filled in the right round? Where are you deepest? What are your needs? Let's go over it all with an NFL analyst and reporter. It's Andy Benoit, who's on the Will Cain Show. Andy, what's up, man?
Hey, Will, how are you?
I'm good. I love talking to you. I love talking about the NFL draft. And I love figuring out sort of the gamesmanship of it all. Andy, let's talk about team needs, and let's also talk about, well, if you need two or three things, where's the best way to go about grabbing that? I want to go over, you know, five, six teams with you. Hopefully we'll get to keep you for longer than one segment. Let's hit some of our favorites here on the Will Cain Show. Let's start with a team that actually doesn't have a first-round pick. Let's start with a team who has been more in destruction mode than creation mode. Let's talk about the Los Angeles Rams. They got rid of Todd Gurley. They got a 52nd and 57th pick in the second round. They're low on draft capital. They're low on cap space. They got a reboot. Totally new concept. Now the pressure's really on Sean McVay and Jared Goff. What do they need to spend these second round picks on to start getting this project rebooted?
Well, I mean, we can touch on, you know, they lost Brandon Cook, so obviously that's part of what one of the voids you're going to have to fill. My guess is those guys in Los Angeles, when you have a very defined passing game the way they do under McVay, they have very clear principles. A lot of it's built on play action and multi-level routes, one guy deep, one guy intermediate, out leverage the defender. When you do that, you have very specific things you want in a wide receiver. And my guess is they've looked at this draft. There are a lot of options at wide receiver, and they've probably identified a half dozen guys who have the key traits to do what they want. So I think they'll be comfortable with the Cooks trade and replacing him in the draft. To me, Will, their biggest need overall is at linebacker on defense. Corey Littleton left for the Raiders. They don't have a single proven guy at that position. And their new defensive coordinator, Brandon Staley, he comes from the Vic Fangio school, and Vic Fangio's defense, maybe more than any defense in the NFL, puts a lot of burden on the linebacker position. So they're not going to be able to run the scheme they want right away until they get some experience and some quality talent in there at linebacker.
Do you have any names, Andy, in the second round, 52, 57, if they're trying to find a linebacker, who'd be around that would be good for them at that time?
You know, that's really outside. I mean, I'd have to – I think that takes a year to watch these guys and really give a good answer to that question, Will. I'm not into the details of these players. I'm familiar with them, but I don't have a great answer. I will say this, though. The traits that they would be looking for – is a guy who is smart and can change directions quickly, because a lot of guys in that scheme, they start out in zone coverage and they have to convert it to man-to-man.
Well, I'll tell you this. Kenneth Murray from Oklahoma and Patrick Queen of LSU are sideline-to-sideline linebackers speed, but I don't know that either of them will last to 52 or 57. One more on the Rams, the wide receiver traits that you would want to fit into that system. Describe from that, and I'll tell you the names I think might be there in the second round as well. What trait?
Okay,
would you want big? Would you want a big ball-grabbing guy or a smaller route-running guy? Who would the Rams want?
I think the first thing they'll look for is precision of mechanics. Is he a technically sound route runner? Because if the guy can be where he's supposed to be, they believe that their designs can win. So you look at the guys they have there still. Cooper Kupp, who I imagine they'll sign long-term at some point. A very precise route runner. Robert Woods might be the best in the league in that regard. So I don't know if size will be a big deal. McVay's comfortable with bigger guys that don't necessarily have to separate. But I think they'll just look for which guy do we like most as a route runner, and then the body types will be a second idea.
Hamler from Penn State. I think he may not go in the second. He may go later, like the third, but Van Jefferson from Florida. There are some names that fit that prototype you just described. Okay, what about the Cleveland Browns? They're sitting at number 8. I think everybody's – I'm not number 8. I'm sorry, I think they're at number 10. And I think everybody is almost solid that the Browns need to put some protection in front of Baker Mayfield. Is that where their team needs are?
Yeah, I would say so. I think an offensive tackle, and I think really a left tackle, because Jack Conklin, who they just signed from the Titans, and I'm sure the Browns are saying, yeah, he can play either side. We'll feel good about that. Jack Conklin's a right tackle in the NFL, and he just got his mechanics figured out last year, which is why he got paid this year. You don't want to mess around with that and have him have to relearn his mechanics by switching sides. So there are a lot of options at tackle in the first round. I'm sure the Browns are looking at those. And they probably feel like all of those first-round guys can play left or right. I know some of them played right tackle in college. But I think they need a left tackle to secure really what they want to do on offense. They're pretty stacked at the rest of the positions on offense.
And there are 4 tackles, maybe 5, who people are looking at in the first half of the first round of the NFL draft. That is Jedrick Wills from Alabama, Mekhi Becton from Louisville, Anthony Thomas from Georgia, and Tristan Wirfs from Iowa. If you're looking for a left tackle, my gut is they're probably going to be wanting somebody like Anthony Thomas from Georgia. Some of these other guys might be guards. Some of these other guys might be right tackles. And then there is my favorite team to hate, and the feeling is mutual. There is the Philadelphia Eagles, Andy. Every mock draft I've seen has a wide receiver going to the Eagles. Is that the top of their needs?
Yeah, I think so. And not just a wide receiver, but really, I think a speed receiver. And I realize that they have DeSean Jackson coming back healthy. And, you know, he's 33, he's coming off an injury season. He can still run very well. But to find another DeSean Jackson type, someone that can lift the top off the defense, why that's important for Philadelphia is, for one, Carson Wentz is willing to make those throws. He wants to go downfield. But for two, Wentz's mindset as a passer before he checks it down will be to throw at the intermediate levels. And Philadelphia does a lot with deep routes and intermediate routes that work hand in hand. So if Wentz is going to throw those intermediate routes anyway, and I think he will, I think that's just the kind of QB he is. He has the arm for that. If that's the way he's going to play, then you for sure want a guy that can go deep, because you need to stretch the field as much as you can to open up those intermediate routes. So I would imagine the Eagles, they could take 2 receivers early in the draft, Will, and it would make sense for them. One of those guys at least needs to have a pair of wheels, because they need to stretch the field. They could not get downfield last year.
I like this game. You play out what they need and give me the traits. I'll give you the names. Henry Ruggs is the speedster from Alabama. Everybody talks about, but he's not going to drop to 21 to the Eagles. Everyone has Justin Jefferson from LSU, who's more of an all-around wide receiver, mocked to the Eagles. But the name you might want to keep an eye on, the sneaky name, is Rager from TCU. He is a speedster just like Andy just described. He might be a guy, if they want speed, that may be where they go. Jalen Rager from TCU. All right, Andy Benoit, NFL analyst and reporter, is good to hang out with this because I have some other teams I want to ask him about, notably the Raiders and what will the Bucks do around Tom Brady. That's coming up on The Will Cain Show, presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. More team needs and a game of I fill in the blank. When he gives me the needs, I'll tell you the name next in The Will Cain Show.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Michael Jordan, the GOAT, made a rare public appearance this morning. He went on GMA, talked about his upcoming documentary, The Last Dance, which airs on ESPN. Stick around. We're going to play for you some of that interview Michael Jordan had with Robin Roberts. It's pretty fascinating coming up on The Will Cain Show. We're still hanging out with NFL analyst and reporter Andy Benoit, breaking down team needs. We're playing a little game where Andy tells me what a team needs, and I'll tell you who the name of the draft might be that fits that team need. Andy, I want to ask you about at least two other teams here. First, the Las Vegas Raiders have two picks in the first round. They have the 12th and the 19th pick. What do they need to do? I think this one's fascinating, Andy, because I don't know if you're going to tell me it includes quarterback or not.
I don't think it includes quarterback. I could certainly see why that would be a discussion for people, and I'm sure the Raiders have looked closely at all the QBs in this draft, just like probably 31 other teams have. I think it's a weapon for the quarterback, Will. And Las Vegas, they have a very specific type of passing game. You know, they threw downfield 20-plus yards. They threw downfield less than just about everyone in the NFL last year. It's about two-thirds as much as a normal team is throwing deep. And when they did throw deep, it was very often just one-on-one routes outside the numbers. So what they have is an intermediate passing game, 15 to 20 yards downfield, really about 15 yards downfield. But they don't have an intermediate receiver on the roster. They don't have what you call a Z receiver, the guy that goes in motion, runs crossing routes. It was going to be Antonio Brown. Obviously, that went sideways in a horrible way. So they need that kind of receiver. They're very reliant on tight ends at the intermediate level right now. They've got a great one in Darren Waller. But their offense would really expand and become more explosive if they're able to find a weapon who can catch the ball 15, 18 yards downfield consistently.
So the name, I feel like, checks the boxes that you just described would be, I think, ironically, another great route-running wide receiver from Alabama, like the one they traded away for a first-round pick. Like Amari Cooper, it's Jerry Jeudy from Alabama. Now, Jeudy, as opposed to CeeDee Lamb, and the Raiders could be in play for any receiver they want. At 12, I think, personally, receiver is going to get pushed down. It's possible those two guys who at the top, along with Ruggs, could be gone, or one of them could be gone by the time the Raiders are on the clock. I think they're going to drop, both because of ability and because of needs of teams ahead of them. But Jeudy is a guy, and I don't know if you've ever looked at him, Andy, but everybody says he's a great route runner. They question his game-breaking ability, whether or not he can take over a game. But what you just described the Raiders need seems to me to be a guy that Jeudy is, which is intermediate, great route running, get open for Derek Carr. If it was what you started with, deep playmaking ability, I would have looked at Ruggs or maybe Lamb there. But Jeudy seems to check the boxes of what you just said.
Yeah, and I think one thing to keep in mind, Will, is that the Raiders, there's two things about the Raiders. For one, they're a playoff contending team. They actually were last year, and so they need to be viewing themselves like that this year. And two is they understand what Derek Carr is. And Carr's, he likes to play within the confines of the system. He'd rather dink and dunk you. And I don't mean that in the negative way. That's just his style of play. He wants the ball out of his hands, and he's a rhythm passer. So, of course, the Raiders would take a game-breaking receiver if they have one sitting there. But they don't have a quarterback that, you know, they don't have a Patrick Mahomes where he's going to extend plays or push the ball downfield super aggressively regularly. So their offense doesn't need the game breaker as much as other offenses might need. They're kind of like the Rams. In fact, Gruden and McVay have a long history together. The Raiders have a very highly schemed passing game. So they don't need big-time talent wide receiver. They just need precision.
That's Jerry Jeudy. What about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? They now have a 43-year-old quarterback, the greatest of all time. What do they do to put Tom Brady in the best situation to succeed?
Well, we can assume, you know, you're not bringing in Brady unless you're going for this year. So I would think they'd want a ready-made type of prospect, at least with their early round picks. They're a lot more, they're not loaded on defense, but they spent their whole draft on defense last year, and a lot of those guys played and got better as rookies. So they can probably feel very good about the path and trajectory their defense is on. So it goes back to, okay, offense, what do we put around Brady? There's a gaping hole at right tackle where they've lost Demar Dotson, a veteran who's not there. And they don't have very much depth at wide receiver. They're good at the top with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. But they need another wideout or two. But right tackle is probably the more immediate need right now.
and you said that needs to be ready-made. So to me, again, there's four, maybe five big offensive line prospects at the top half of the first round, and that's going to lead you away from guys who are athletic projections like Mekhi Becton out of Louisville or Tristan Wirfs out of Iowa. You're going to hope then that it's Jedrick Wills out of Alabama or Anthony Thomas out of Georgia who are a little more ready-made for Tom Brady. Last, really quickly, I know you've broken down a lot of the guys who've exchanged or changed teams in the offseason, the free agent acquisitions. Which is the best fit of everything you've seen so far? This guy fits this team and this scheme really well.
Oh, that's a good question. Maybe because he's fresh in my mind, as we talked about in the last segment, but Corey Littleton to the Raiders, to me, is a good one. The Raiders got Nick Kwiatkowski as well from Chicago. So all of a sudden, they have some speed at linebacker, and that's going to make them a lot better on third downs. And really, they need that, especially because they don't have a dominant pass rusher yet. And I don't know if they'll find one in this draft. So they're going to be dependent on their back end guys in coverage and zone coverage and passing situations. And they went out and spent a lot of money to get maybe, well, certainly one of the really elite pass covering linebackers in the NFL in Corey Littleton.
All right. Really good stuff. Giving us team needs. Hopefully I helped out. Give you some potential names to watch for on Thursday night. Andy, always love talking to you. You do great work. I appreciate the time, man.
Hey, anytime, Will. Thank you.
Okay. Take care. It's Andy Benoit here on the Will Cain Show. The Last Dance. It's 9 Eastern. That's my only complaint, because I think I want to watch it with my boys. I think my kids need to see what real determination is. I think they need to see what real competitive fire is. The documentary on Michael Jordan on ESPN, The Last Dance, this weekend on ESPN. But this morning, Jordan went on ABC and talked to Robin Roberts in a long and rare interview. I have sound for you next, coming up here on The Will Cain Show.
Thank you for listening to The Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to The Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.